the highest APV they have.
You're going straight barley wine. Perfect. This is Drew, this puddle of a human over here. Hey, Matt and Drew with Shear Partners, excited to catch up on what's moving the market. We're seeing a lot of differences over the past several months on the supply and demand side, and so we're going to cover that in some conversational detail today. Just for reference, this is end of first quarter 2023. So I'll just say the supply side of things has been kind of crazy, but the funding is really influencing a lot of decisions right now.
Yeah. I mean, private funding's definitely down, public funding's definitely up, which has caused what we were seeing with historical demand and then supply delivering to meet that demand now slowed. I think a lot of landlords are trying to grasp how they're going to fill their buildings in the next couple years, because honestly, I don't know when we're going to pick back up and be back where we were. I don't know if we're ever going to be back to where we were in terms of demand.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful that we are, right? Science still needs to get funded. Diseases still need to be cured. But, you know, I think with the public funding, we're currently experiencing an uptick in early stage activity, right? So a lot of companies are actually looking towards a lot of these landlords that delivered suites on a speculative basis. And, you know, they're looking to come out of incubation, university, need to find their first lab and really start doing R&D. So we're seeing that happen, which is usually a good bellwether that, you know, seed stage, early stage investment is happening. But you're right, we haven't seen any of the Series A's or Series B's close as of late, and I don't think we will, likely for the remainder of the year, is my guess.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, everybody knows, and that was familiar with the funding, you had the VCs were being driven by their exit with public market IPO or second offerings. And so the challenge there is, how do they get their money out? And so they've been leaning more towards the early stage stuff. They've been leaning maybe more towards the late stage companies that have good clinical trials coming out of phase two into phase three with a clear exit to acquisition through big pharma. And that kind of brings up the next subject, which is M&A activity and how's that going to influence the market potentially. But yeah, landlords and developers were leaning into ground up development, and that implies big transactions, big kind of well-funded transactions, well-funded companies going in there. And we just, to date, over the past year and a half, we just haven't seen it.
Yeah, and I think more so than ever before, I mean, we have a unique insight, right? Since we operate in a lot of our biotech hubs, specifically Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, DC, Virginia. So, you know, there's going to be needles in the haystack here where people are going to get, you know, pretty substantial funding in these markets. But, you know, this funding's tranche now. You're not getting all that cash up front.
Right.
And so more so than ever before, especially when you're approaching a build scenario, because once you raise that significant capital, you're not looking at those spec suites. You're looking for a specific build, and it's either to attract top talent or there's something functionally driving that requirement, right? And typically we see that on the manufacturing side, right? You need to control some part of your manufacturing process. Yeah. And so, you know, more so than ever before, I think landlords are competing in who's dishing out the highest tenant improvement allowances, right? And if you don't have the cash behind that in terms of landlord's contribution, unfortunately, I think you're going to lose out on a lot of deals. Because I think at least that's what we're seeing on the tenant side, especially when you're, you know, a therapeutic company. You're probably not a contract-based company, but a therapeutic company. That's okay with that higher rental rate, but they want to make sure that they're not having that heavy capital expenditure up front on that lease. And, you know, it's always been kind of a driving factor, but I think that is really paramount now, more so than I think I've seen in my career over the last 7 years.
That capital preservation on the front end.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that kind of alludes to what's happening in the market on the supply side, which is like, now we have tons of options for our clients when we go out there and we're searching for a 5 to 10,000 square foot requirement. We can work with existing second gen spaces through subleases. We can We can look at developers who have a lab-ready building and a tenant improvement allowance that you can get most of the way there. And so depending on how specialized it needs to be, you could cut your occupancy costs in terms of just initial capital outlay, and you can cut your time because of these subleases down dramatically. And so totally different market than we saw 18 months ago.
Yeah, new competition, I think, is bringing in a lot of factors, right? And you know, the biggest thing we always get in terms of meetings with the companies that actually do have the opportunity to expand in today's market is, you know, where are we going to find those concessions from these landlords, right? And so everybody always focuses on rental rate. Where's rate right now? But in all reality, that rate is what it is, right? A lot of these landlords, especially the ones that are doing ground development, underwrote those buildings and need to maintain that rate in order to justify doing a deal. And so you're going to find those concessions elsewhere, and that's abatement, potentially term. We're seeing term kind of go down. You can do existing space 3-year deals now, or before, you know, it was 5 years or more. But, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, they still need to adhere to the interest rates. They still need to hear everything. That's everything's going on in the macro economy. And again, they underwrote that project and they have financing on that project and they need to maintain that rate.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I feel like at some point you could see rents drop if it gets competitive enough and there's enough clustered in the right size ranges and functionalities. But yeah, I agree.
There's not enough tenants right now to...
Yeah, so it's like, why if nobody's buying and you put something on sale, nobody's still buying, why did you put it on sale?
So it really hasn't been tested yet, right? But you know, again, from Philadelphia, we've seen rent growth go exponentially as people keep on testing the market rates. We're seeing rents rise with new competition entering Maryland. We're seeing that in Delaware. We're seeing, you know, all these markets kind of fluctuate, and it's going to be interesting to see where they kind of pan out over the next 2-3 years. Because I think they'll start to normalize, specifically in Philadelphia, right? I think everything went kind of crazy and bonkers, you know, that last quarter in 2021 where like people were like just throwing out 75.
Yeah.
60.
Yeah, no,
seems a bite.
Yeah, and that rent compression that we saw in like 2018, 19, 20 into 21, where everybody was just chasing the top of the market. And so it was like this ubiquitous pricing across the entire market. Nobody had any kind of differentiator between class A, function, location, amenities. It was all just lab space to the market, and it was all priced almost exactly the same. I expected that coming into this new market where you have clear first generation space and a sublease market, that you would have a lot more distinction between each of those from a pricing standpoint, but it's all still clumped together.
Yeah.
Except, you know, now we're starting to see geographic concessions. So if you're in Frederick as opposed to the I-270 corridor, for example, you're seeing a little bit of a concession in terms of rental rate. If you're in you know, let's call it West Philly, U City versus some of the suburbs there, you're seeing a little concession in rent. But otherwise, you know, everybody's still kind of chasing that top of the market.
Yeah. You know, switching gears here, you know, I'm 100% pure tenant rep. And so, you know, I've been advising my clients, at least, if there's nothing functionally driving your need to sign a lease right now, don't. Right. If you don't have a grant saying, or there's some expiration on a grant where you need to take space in order to, you know, cash out on that grant, or you know, you actually are one of those few companies that has secured some financing and need to staff up, and you don't have the current facilities to meet that need, or you need to bring on, you know, additional R&D capacity or manufacturing capacity. Yeah. Then let's hit the market and let's go evaluate and go through the process. But right now, it's really a factor of, you know, we don't know how the market's going to pan out from a fundraising perspective, right? Yeah. Don't take the overhead when you don't need to. Keep it lean. And then also, the market's good right now from being soft and being tenant friendly, more so than it's ever been in my career, but I think it's going to get better.
Yeah, I agree.
So just wait a little bit, you know, because I think this is going to stretch, because I think, you know, macro level, you know, I think, you know, private funding is still, especially, you know, leads on rounds, at least from what I'm hearing, is, you know, folks are looking at their own portfolio before looking at the market, right? They're repositioning technologies, they're looking at that their current portfolios, making sure that those companies are taken care of before going out and dishing capital to new companies, new technology, et cetera. So, I mean, again, there's going to be needles in the haystack, and those three things that I said where, you know, you could justify an expansion in today's market.
Yeah.
But again, I think the hot take that I have is just don't do it. And this is just me going against getting paid.
Right.
Doing my job.
But do your homework.
Yes.
Right. Do your homework. Be prepared for when you get that next round of funding, when you get that next contract signed, whatever the driving factor is, you have it in place. You have it ready to go so that when it happens, regardless of where the market is, you're ready to go.
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head, right? These aren't a, hey, I need space and it's signed tomorrow.
Right.
These, if you are looking for existing space, it is likely a 6-month process. That's to identify, negotiate, and make some minimal changes, right? No space is perfect. But if we're looking to build a facility, it's 18 months in today's market.
Yeah.
Construction, we're still seeing long leads.
That blows me away, by the way.
Yeah.
The fact that we still haven't figured out the supply chain stuff and we're still lagging on electrical, we're still lagging on HVAC. I mean, people go into it and they think because Amazon's delivering on time now, everything's just moving, you know, peach keen in the market, and it's not the case.
Jeff, can't deliver HVAC?
Oh, man, it is tough out there. And so there's still a pressure on some of those bigger items that have the circuit boards and have some element of complexity to them. You know, that's a real factor for timing on these builds. And it's an uncertainty, and it goes back to the idea of if you can find it in the market in a second generation option, just take it, figure it out.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the biggest story of the years to come is space is going to come back, right?
Yeah.
You know, you've been doing this longer than I have, but, you know, in most instances, once my client reaches above 10,000 square feet, I usually have to go out to the market for a build scenario. I think now we're in a unique situation where there's going to be some inventory in the larger size ranges where if you are looking for that second, third stage of growth in your company, you could find and utilize existing space.
Yeah.
So I think that is unique.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the supply in, let's say, 2010 to 2015, where you could find just about any type of space you needed in any blocking size. And it just sat because you didn't have that kind of velocity. You didn't have the technologies that were driving as fast as they are today in terms of just like the cell and gene therapy world and the funding events around those. And so, you know, that was an interesting market because you didn't have to deal with all the construction issues. Now we're kind of reverting back to existing inventory. Don't worry as much about, you know, worry about modification. Don't worry about building it from scratch. Edit, don't create.
Don't create.
Yeah.
When I started at lab, if you were looking to build a pretty basic, no thrills, BSL2 wet lab, it was about $175, $200 a foot.
Right.
Now it's like close to $300
oh, yeah,
or above.
Talk about the price. So,
you know, I think, again, I think macro level, it's going to be a slow year. I think we're going to see supply continue to increase as, you know, unfortunately, people bring space back to the market. Landlords deliver this new product. But I think that's going to be ripe for opportunities for the companies that can get through this and weather the storm, stay lean if you can. But if you have the opportunity to do so, test the market.
Yeah.
You know, again, nothing, you're not wed to anything until you sign a lease. So, you know, a lot of this on us is on the front end, right? We help you budget. We help you understand and almost run a parallel path with your financing initiatives to understand, you know, what will this facility cost when I need it,
right,
in today's market? And you can bake that into your numbers. And I think more so than ever, investors are looking for you to have fully vetted that before looking to them for cash.
Yeah. Well, and having a plan to mitigate it.
Yeah.
You have to be good stewards of that money. How do you mitigate your capital outlay on the front end? And, you know, 2 years ago, it was almost impossible because you were creating space everywhere you went. Now it feels like there's potential solutions either through landlord financing or, you know, that second gen market we keep talking about.
Yeah, and it goes through, I mean, there's institutional landlords in this market and all these markets, right? And then there's the more independent folks,
yeah,
value add folks. So I think it's going to be interesting to see. Again, it's kind of that, especially on the therapeutic side, the fight for the tenant improvement dollars.
Yep.
You know, who's got the cash on hand? Who's got the financing in hand that can do $250, $300 in TIs potentially, depending on the structure that we negotiate? So I think we're going to continue to test that as the months and really year progresses.
Yeah. No, that's going to be a clear differentiator in the market. And if they really want to hold to those rents, I mean, that's probably going to be the way that landlords end up winning it, is just amortizing additional dollars into there so that they can ramp up their rental rates and get what they need to perform on the buildings.
What tertiary markets are you excited about right now? Who do you think is going to grow when kind of others are kind of remain stagnant?
You're talking about like in geographic?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know. I like Frederick. I think Frederick's an interesting market right now, just in Maryland.
You like the breweries there?
that helps, right? No, I think Frederick has a lot of potential. Maybe not on the R&D side as much, although I do think there's potential there. But I think there's potential from a workforce standpoint, where you just have a ready-made scientific pool there that you can draw from. I think it'll probably lean more towards the contract groups, the CROs, CMOs, just like it always has. But that market is relatively untapped in quality of life, you know, reducing commute, all those things come into play when you talk about that market. So, you know, I'd say in Maryland, that's probably top of my list. What about you?
I mean, I'm still excited about Philadelphia. Philadelphia, and then, you know.
That's not fair. You didn't.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think.
Philly's an amazing market.
Philly's exciting for a lot of reasons, right? I think everybody's well aware now of why, right? Cell and gene therapy, all the great universities there, urban atmosphere. I think there's just a lot of things going for it. And of course, adjacency to transportation that can easily get you to investors in New York and Boston, right?
Yeah.
Where a lot of that money is getting distributed. So I think that's exciting. And then, you know, there's little markets, right? There's the Charlottesvilles of the world that, you know, you've got UVA, which is a leading academic institution that's spending a lot of, you know, last I heard there were 75 companies that, you know, are trying to, you know, find a home and grow the cluster. So, you know, I think, again, science is still going to get funded, right? It's just, we're kind of weathering a storm right now. You know, science will still progress. Companies will still need to get formed. It's just a question of, you know, when the public markets are going to open up and people can justify investing and get exits out of these companies, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see not only, you know, how these kind of major clusters progress, but I think, you know, we're seeing it right now in Colorado a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your dream of skiing every day and
love that, man.
Working in Colorado. But then I think there's something to be said about the Charlottesville. I think when you look to it, you really need to look towards those academic drivers, right? Where's the innovation happening? Where are these companies being formed? And I think more so than ever before, I think it's, you know, historically it's been a lot of venture deciding where these companies go. And I think now we have a lot of at least co-founders, academic founders of these companies that are very adamant on staying local.
Yeah.
They want to stay local. They have families. They have roots. And I don't think that's really the story anymore. I think there's investors now that are willing to give you the money and you can grow your company if you can justify it. But then again, it's a supply issue.
So let's break this down a little bit more, because I really like this topic. So you have your top tier markets. You have Boston, San Francisco. Those are undisputed.
Monsters. Yeah.
And I don't think anybody's touching them.
No.
And then you have everybody else fighting. Well, it's interesting, right? You have everybody else kind of fighting for third, fourth, fifth place. And so San Diego, you have Seattle just completing that West Coast. And then you have Maryland, Philadelphia, Research Triangle Park. And I would call that the second tier market. And then you have everybody else that we just talked about, right? And so those are the Charlottesvilles. Those are the Denver, Austin, Salt Lake, Columbus, Pittsburgh, places in Florida. you know, you have all these other markets that are growing usually around a university. And the question becomes, well, which one of those merits paying attention to from a real estate standpoint? And then which one of those is going to grow? Which one has the best catalyst for growth? Which one has the best access to intellectual property or tech transfer? Which one has the best access to talent? And you know, that usually comes from the university that's spinning the tech out. Which one of those has the best access to capital?
And which one of those is an airport?
Which logistically, like, how do you get to these places and how do you bring people in? And then which one is going to solve for the facility side of it,
yeah,
which is what we're obviously concerned about. And so when you break that down and you say, okay, which one is the most exciting market, which I think was your initial question, and I just stumbled all over it. But I think...
Frederick's exciting market, though?
It is, but, you know, it's kind of an extension of the I-270 corridor, in my mind, just like you have Cambridge to Waltham or Cambridge to, you know, any of those other 128 type of markets, yeah, just going to Boston as the analogy. But, you know, I think there are real, I think there's real reason to be, and just to your point, excited about Philly. It's got all the right dynamics. It's got all those pillars we just talked about. And it really has the attention because you've got some celebrity scientists, I'll call them, who have amazing technology spinning out of their labs out of Penn. And you have a research hospital, quick access there. And you have, you know, the right kind of mojo to start an urban cluster. I think that's probably going to be the best market on the East Coast. And maybe the best market in terms of growth for the next 5 years.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, and I think, you know, we can always talk about, you know, what are the gating factors in all of these markets. And I think one of them is, you know, industry organizations and really state jurisdictions rallying around a common goal.
Yeah.
Right? I feel like people stumble all over themselves. And, you know, we always say that the economic incentives are always a nice to have. They're not a must have, right? But they are very nice to have. And especially when your company is growing exponentially, these companies, again, in they don't operate like your typical real estate user, where if they're successful, especially on the therapeutic side, they're engaging in a real estate transaction likely every 18 to 24 months,
yeah,
at some level, right? Some form of expansion or at least exploring it. And so, you know, that means bringing on more staff, and that means that, you know, you really need to be in front of these economic incentive organizations in order to, you know, benefit from those dollars. But again, industry organizations in themselves, mainly in the markets that we operate, and you mentioned Frederick, and yeah, all these markets have great aspects of what they do for the state, right? I mean, you've got all these great things happening through 70. It's historically the core of the market, but there's great things happening in Baltimore, right? Hopkins is the leading academic institution, arguably, in the United States.
Yeah.
But then Frederick is great for manufacturing talent. Who's to say that you can't have a facility in each sector of that market, right? But these markets need to talk to each other a little bit more, I feel like.
So let's go back to the economic development incentives. What are we talking about there that moves the needle at all? I mean, I struggle with this because I'm like, don't let the tail wag the dog. If you have a real estate requirement, don't look at location based exclusively on who's giving you the best incentives, because you're just not going to find that much that, as I said, moves the needle. And so I haven't seen anything that really gets a tenant excited because it helps them substantially, either on the capital side. You know, a lot of these pre-revenue companies struggle with using tax incentives because they're not making any money. Mm-hmm. And so where's your benefit there? Moving a construction project through faster, through permitting and that sort of thing, and those agencies, good, but not great. I just wonder who's gonna step up and say, as a jurisdiction, we're doing it better and let us prove it. And I think you have to maybe put some money on the line to make that differentiator. But I don't know, have you seen anything?
It'd be like Philadelphia, and you'd be like, you don't know when it's going to happen. But no, I agree with you totally. I mean, I think you first need to look at, you know, what's really driving the requirement and where that should be located, right? It's, you know, if you're manufacturing, you're going to look at different markets. And it's depending on the life cycle of the company, right? If you're looking for a commercial manufacturing facility, there could be some real dollars in terms of incentives. Sure. But talent's going to be your main driver, and your talent costs are going to outweigh your facility costs.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to look toward North Carolina or maybe even the great state of Maryland, right? In terms of, you know, maybe housing the requirement. But, you know, I think you're right. I think it's constantly something that comes up in conversations, especially as when requirements grow, because people think they can leverage these incentive dollars. But especially when you're on the therapeutic side, burning through cash.
Yeah.
You're not Amazon looking for 1 million square feet and really going to be able to benefit from not having taxes for 20 years.
Right, right. Although, and any economic development folks out there, this isn't my idea, but I love this idea. The idea where you could take those tax incentives and find a way to make them tradable, make them create a market for them. So make them like shares of stock, where now you can sell that same benefit to somebody who is revenue positive, who is profitable and can benefit from it. That would be kind of a cool way to we can give you this incentive that we've created.
Kind of like with the FDA with breakthrough designations, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Only I don't know if you're going to get hundreds of millions of dollars for them, but
who knows?
Yeah. Depending on how big your facility, how big your operation. I mean, there's certainly money there. And so you sell them for 70 cents on the dollar to the group that can benefit, and they gain 30% on each one of those dollars. That's something, you know?
It's money.
So that's maybe what's missing, is that transferable piece to those incentives. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Not my idea, but you heard it here.
Trademarked. Yeah, I mean, I was convinced of this podcast. I'm actually liking it. I think what we're going to try to cover is just kind of what's happening in the industry, right? And this could go beyond real estate, but, you know, a lot of our clients come to us not only for what's happening in the real estate market, but what's happening, you know, from macro level, what other people are doing, what are we seeing? Because, again, we're tagged very early on, right? Real estate requirements take a long time. So we're usually working right there with some attorneys in terms of how early we are in the process. So, you know, I do think we are at a value and an interesting lens to the market currently. And we have to talk to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's keep these things going. Maybe make some people upset. Sorry about the economics. But, yeah, let's keep it going.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. Talk to you guys soon.